Lisa. Thanks for listening. God, what a rough day. I mean, I was just listening to what happened in Barcelona and stuff like that. I don't know what to say. I mean, what I have to say at this point is not really what's necessary. It's just, I just, you know, am horrified, and I'm horrified by so many, 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 many things. But I do want to make sure that you know you're listening to Radio Free Brooklyn, which is the best radio station in the Western Hemisphere. Go online, check us out. We have a billion great shows. No, we have like 70 great shows, all different kinds of shows, talk shows, music shows. And if you click on our donate button, you could help us stay on the air. And if anything, we need help. We all need this kind of media right now. Free media, nonprofit media. You know what I'm saying. I don't need to tell you more. Anyway, I just came back from vacation, and it was a little bit of a road trip through the real America, partly because I was really curious about what's going on out there. What's going on in rural America? I went with my husband. We got a really good deal on, that's one thing, it's cheap out there. And we got a good value on a lake, cabin on the lake, which we stayed in for a few nights. And then we went to Erie, where we have a good artist friend, Larry Walczak. Shout out, Larry. He entertained us. We saw all the sights of Erie. Very cool place. But, you know, so anyway, in my my effort to reach out, I started a lovely conversation with this lovely waitress in Erie, Pennsylvania. I'm just going to say her first name, Nikki. I think that's okay. And I wanted her to be on the show today because she had a lot of really interesting things. She was a kind person, you could tell, and she had voted for Trump. And I wanted to get her point of view, because I do think that, I mean, you can say these people aren't educated. You can say, I mean, I know that everybody pretty much that listens to this show or this station or has anything to do with this station is probably, you know, as they say, progressive, liberal, whatever you want. But I do want to say that there are people out there that are on the other side that are decent people. They may not be as aware. They may not be educated. They may be in their own, you know, media bubble. But anyway, that was my effort. So I asked her to be on the air, and I want to give you a snapshot of the letter I got back, why she couldn't do it today. I was just going to have her call in because I have a scheduled guest that I'm going to introduce you who's fabulous in a second. But anyway, she said, "Hi, Lisa. It was very nice to meet you last week." This is after I invited her to be on the sent her an email. "It was nice to hear other views and beliefs from friends and neighbors. I pray for our country to find peace and focus on our values again. Although I am unable to call into your radio show, I appreciate you wanting me to share with others how I feel. Listen to this, folks. I work two jobs and am at work during your show. School starts next week, so we are busy getting ready. I have to prepare my classroom and get my four children ready to go as well." So I just want you to know that this is what these people are dealing with. I know a lot of people that work really hard and are really dedicated and really great, kind people and all that. But I do not know anyone personally in my social circle who has four children that they are working two jobs for. And that's what this woman is doing. And that's what a lot of these people are doing. And they are not as informed probably as we would like them to be. So what I'm trying to say is compassion, folks. Love, acceptance, compassion. Okay, got it. Let's get to our regularly scheduled show and our guest today, whose name, well, you know, I'm a little neurotic about the names, but I'm going to say his first name. His name is Ulich.
Very good.
Very good.
Yeah, impressive.
And why don't you say your last name for us?
It's Ulgen. So Ulich Ulgen.
And Ulich was born in Turkey.
That's right.
And then he moved to your parents.
My mom and I moved to Minnesota when I was 9 years old. Yeah.
And is your dad still in Turkey?
He's back in Turkey. Yeah.
Yeah. Have you seen him lately?
Of course. I just saw him 2 months ago when I visited.
When you visited Turkey. So anyway, the reason I thought Ulrich would make an awesome guest is because his pursuit is not unlike mine. What he does is he puts, and you've been doing this 3 years now?
Yes.
So he puts flyers on the street and invites strangers to come to his apartment in the East Village and do a podcast with him. And he's been doing this, like I just said, over 3 years, and he's had 200 different podcasts and has had quite a wild experience. So we're going to hear about, and I encourage you, you know, it's gotten a lot of press and stuff like that. It's called murmurtalks.com is the website to go to.
Murmurtalk.com.
And you can hear it also on iTunes. So, I mean, you can go and listen to it, which you should. I mean, it's really interesting. He's a little more candid, maybe less therapy-like than I am, of course. He has his own style, but he's funny and he's charming and all that. And, you know, he's got a big mouth because he's on the, you know, podcast guy. And so he's got all the great qualities of a podcaster. So you should go check that out. But when I'm really, you know, I'm trying to peek behind the curtain here, my goals today is to find out the reason he started doing this, as you said, Ulrich, was to make friends. You felt lonely. Is that right?
Gosh. I mean, you can only imagine going from the New York of the Middle East, which is, you know, Istanbul, to a tiny, tiny village, essentially in Minnesota. That's a pretty drastic jump, especially considering the fact that I barely knew anything about American culture, except for, you know, the cartoons that I watched on Nickelodeon. But I couldn't speak a lick of English.
You couldn't speak. And how old were you?
I was 9 years old.
So that must have really were you really unhappy?
Gosh, so much. I couldn't even tell you how unhappy I was, Dr. Lisa.
And how did you wind up coming to New York?
That's an interesting story. It was through a chance encounter with an opera singer.
Oh, right. At the Y.
At the YMCA.
I read about this. And yeah. You came to New York and you visited, right?
And you know, I just
but
saw
as
him
an
last
adult,
week.
You right. came to New York as an adult on your own.
Of course. But
did you go to college?
I did, yeah. Where'd I went to, not University of Minnesota. I went to a community college.
And what did you study there? What were
I went in for general education, but you know, I'll be honest with you, my heart wasn't really that into it.
So what I want to get to today is find out how this 3 years of this podcast has affected Ulrich. And also, he spent a lot of time near the Syrian border and has a real perspective on refugees. So I want to make sure we get to that. And he's also kind of pissed off, which we need to talk about. I think we need to get that off his chest. He's pissed off right now because he put up some flyers and he made a joke about stuffed, you know, he uses like a teddy bear as sort of his icon a bit. And he made some joke about teddy bears' lives matter, and he got a lot of right.
I'll just interject for a second. First and foremost, it was not meant to be a joke. It was not meant to be poking fun at anything.
Right.
To get the word out there for my podcast, I snare all of my guests off the street.
Right.
So I try to do the flyers to be relevant to what's going on in the current times, and the headline was "Teddy Bear Lives Matter." And Yamosh, being my silent co-host of the show, he's a teddy bear.
Oh, see, yeah.
I thought it was something that was relevant. And if you read it, if you read the flyer, it says, bear or human, male or female, it doesn't matter. Everybody is welcome to murmur. And I reiterate this twice on the flyer. And it's a program that's very, very inclusive. I never turned down
anybody. Yeah, and I also want to say, like, you've had some fairly, like, threatening or, you know, people I wouldn't want to have in my apartment. You've had homeless people and drug addicts.
Murderers. I've had people who've been to jail for killing in my apartment. And I'm not judging them. I'm willing to give them a platform to speak and engage with them and feed them and be a good host. And I have people calling me up saying that I'm being insensitive, or dare I say it.
So how do they call you? Like what? So anyway, so this is not true that you are judgmental or, you know, or any, I don't even want to say racist, sexist. Your home, your podcast is an open book. And so there's no question about that. We your integrity is not, as far as we're concerned today, but it was misinterpreted. So anyway, what I want to understand is, how are you getting on the flyers? Do you put your phone number?
Yeah, everything's up there on the flyer. My phone number, my email address, my apartment. So, gosh, my mom is worried sick. She's thinking somebody's going to show up at my apartment, you know, with a gun or
worried. I'm a little worried. Why did you put your address? You put your address on there?
Yeah.
How come?
It's because, you know, if it wasn't for the amazing strangers that I met in my travels overseas that you mentioned in your intro over in Syria and Turkey, you know, I don't think that I would be alive today. So in a way, I feel like I owe these people, you know, these strangers.
So you feel that, like, by being as open as you can in your flyer, that you are instilling trust in them?
I'm honoring what was done to me, the kindness that was shown to me, and mm-hmm. I'm trying to show that same level of kindness back to the community.
Okay, you know what? I really respect that. Mm-hmm. I understand how upsetting it is for somebody with your values and integrity that you've left yourself open and now you're getting shit for it. So tell me what's going on. Is this the first time you've gotten shit for it?
No, gosh. There's actually a guy in the West Village who every now and then will send me literally death threats over my flyers because for him, he considers it littering. So you would think that something so trivial as wanting mm-hmm. to do a podcast with random strangers would be, you know, I have good intentions, you know. I'm
obviously
not trying to hurt anybody.
Yeah, no, obviously. You know? But what I think is really painful to you, or what would be painful, and I was saying earlier, I had a somewhat of an experience that was similar, where I had a piece of art, you know, taken out of a show because they said it was racist, you know, and I'm like, so not, or whatever. But anyway, so I understand that, mm-hmm. you know, when your integrity, after you make so much effort to have integrity and sacrifices, and it's called in a contest.
Absolutely.
So is that what you're upset about, that somebody's doubting your integrity?
Yeah, well, I think what I'm more upset about is that the fact that there were people that saw this flyer, my recent flyer, that felt offended by it, which really, really was not my intention. But the interesting thing, Dr. Lisa, is that immediately after that feeling of sadness that I have for them, for the fact that I hurt them, I start feeling a little angry because I'm thinking to myself, look, there's a president in this country who's about to perhaps start a war, and you're getting upset at something so trivial, you know? And the thing is, we live in a time when political correctness is like the way to be. And I don't want to be politically correct. I want to be able to say what I feel in my heart. And everybody should have the right to say what they want to say. But at the same time, willing to listen and have compassion for each other.
I totally agree with what you're saying. I do think it is realistic to, if you are going to put yourself out there in the way that you do, and I'm not saying that you shouldn't or that I don't, you know, I think it's ballsy as hell. And I admire it. I couldn't do it. But I do think that, you know, some of this is just going to come with the territory, right?
I guess it's to be expected. I'm learning it firsthand. Mm-hmm.
Do you feel threatened by it?
Absolutely not. No, okay. No. Because I know my intentions and my heart's in the right place.
But
so
do
I'm not
you feel like
it.
A crazy person's going to come to your home?
I've had lots of crazy people in my home, and I've had wonderful conversations with
them.
So
it doesn't, do people ever just show up at your home?
Of course. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And none of that, you're not afraid of any of that?
Absolutely not. I mean, like I said, if it wasn't for the strangers that I met 2 or 3 years ago, I wouldn't be alive today. So this is my way of honoring, you know, their kindness. It's as simple as that.
Well, I'm going to say that I think anger is the appropriate response to feeling like you're being exploited by them a little bit. Because, in other words, you're not the problem. You're not the problem. You're not the person that's really the racist person, the person that these people who are angry at racism or repression or whatever, that there's plenty of that. Taking it out on you is not the problem. I think the thing is you have made yourself vulnerable and they're cowards. So anger is a really appropriate response. I think that if you can look at it from that point of view and not think that it's because of your truth or anything about you. It's just people taking advantage of you. And if you are kind and vulnerable, you're going to be taken advantage of. Hello, it's going to happen. That's part of the deal. And this is what's happening to you, I think.
Yeah,
does that make any
sense? You put it so eloquently, Dr. Lisa. Thank
well,
you.
That's very
my
sweet.
My brain is scrambling right now because there's a lot of pain in my heart, so it's hard to convey my words in the way that.
Please don't try not to make that about you if you can. Just remember,
that's what everybody's telling me.
But be angry at those people, and make sure you're being taking care of yourself and being self-protective. And if you need to pull back a little, pull back and see till you feel better. It's okay.
Thanks, Dr. Lisa.
Be nice
I already feel better, thanks to you.
Well, anyway. No, I could see it was on your mind, and I wanted to at least get it out.
Thank you.
So I want to find out, like, one of the things that we've acknowledged is that you started this podcast, Making Friends. So what has happened? Like, what has the journey been like for you just on that level? Like, as far as feeling more open to people, feeling like you can really making friends and stuff. Can you talk about that a little?
Yeah. I mean, I'll say this to you. The fact that you're standing right before me right now, Dr. Lisa, and that we're engaging in this conversation without my hands getting sweaty, without me trembling in my seat. And with the fact that I'm looking at you right in the eyes, it's an absolute miracle, because these were things that I would not have been able to do 3 years ago. I was a nervous wreck.
What was that from?
When I moved from Turkey to Minnesota, I think I had major, major trouble making friends, because I went from being the most popular kid in class in Istanbul to being the loser foreigner kid who couldn't speak English.
That's hard.
Yeah. So there was a lot of things culturally that I needed to become assimilated to. And, you know, I was behind. I didn't know the language. So that was difficult.
Did you get any help, or how did the teachers react? How did your parents react?
Well,
did you miss your dad? I mean,
oh gosh, very much so. The first 5 to 6 years of being in this country, I would get insanely homesick, to the point where I would look at the map, a world map, and just stare at the Turkey, just on the map, and just look at it, imagining that's where my family, that's where my friends are at right now. And I'm here stuck in, 12 feet of snow in February in Minnesota, freezing my butt off.
Minnesota. How did your mother pick Minnesota?
I know. She got a job offer at the Mayo Clinic.
Oh, okay. So what does she do?
She's a doctor.
Oh, all right. Okay. Well, I mean, in the long run, looking back, she kind of made the right decision.
Yeah, I still feel a little ambivalent about that, Dr.
Okay.
Lisa. It's a sensitive subject.
I can see that. I can see that. But I mean, you can
she
see that
best.
She really wanted the best for you.
That's 100% true. Yeah. Sometimes you have good intentions. Maybe the outcome isn't good, but she definitely had good intentions.
Well, the outcome is still going on. How old are you?
How old am I, or how old was I?
How old are you now? You were
28.
9 when you moved.
I'm 28.
You're 28. Yeah, so you got plenty of time.
That's true.
Yeah, things are you're working on it. You're doing really good.
By the way, can I be honest with you for a second,
sure.
Dr. Lisa? One thing that really irks me when people come on my show, the guests on my podcast, is that they never take the time to ask me how I'm doing. So how's life treating you, Dr. Lisa? Are you doing okay?
Well, that's very sweet. Things are okay. I've got, I'm really grateful. The one thing I'm always grateful, like if I'm healthy I mean, not that I've had like serious health problems or anything, really. I mean, I've had a little bit here or there, but.
But you look okay.
I feel, as long as I'm healthy and, you know, my husband and I aren't on the brink of divorce. I'm good.
Yeah.
I'm good. I feel very grateful.
Good.
I mean, I'm an anxious person. I'm not always a happy person. I'm not a happy person. I'm an anxious, person who dwells on the wrong thing. I'm an anxious, you know, person.
High five to that. High five to that.
But I am very grateful. I'm very grateful. So, but thank you for thinking of me and checking in.
Of course.
And I'm, you know, I'm feeling good that we were able to get what was that, you know, issue out on the table.
Of course.
So that was.
I feel so much more relieved. Well, the fact that you allow me the 5 minutes to talk about it, I feel I have wings, floating away.
Uh-oh, I better write this down. That's a compliment. I got to write it down. Okay, internalize it. Don't deflect. Okay, we did that. We're on it. But what I really do want, so here you are. Here you are in New York, and you are, so did you ever resolve making friends as a child?
No, never. I think, this was an ongoing pursuit, Dr. Lisa. In fact, all the way up to the age of 23, I was literally living right around the corner from here on Knickerbocker and Hart Street when I just decided for myself, you know what? Things have to change.
What year was that?
2000, it was 3 years ago. So 2014,
okay.
2013,
yeah,
2014.
Not that long ago.
It was the winter of 2013. I lived right in this neighborhood. So, mm-hmm. you know, it's rush of memories
right
just in, being back here.
Right.
But I, you know, you can only live a certain way of your life for so long until you realize, you know what? This isn't working. I've been doing the same thing for the past 20 years, banging my head on the wall, wondering why I'm not making any friends. Something needs to change. So I made that change, and Murmur was the conduit for me to. Mm-hmm.
So
change.
When you went to Turkey and Syria, were you in Syria actually?
I wasn't in Syria, but I was literally miles away
so
from.
So were you in? Were you in refugee camps?
No. I was mainly just hitchhiking and traveling on my own. Mm-hmm. I think what happened was, you know, winter of 2013. New York was not treating me well. I was insane, for lack of a better word.
Mm-hmm.
I left my job on a whim. I was working at this place called City Winery. I was insanely.
Oh, yeah, I know the place.
You know the
what
place?
What were you doing there?
I was waiting tables. Yeah.
Oh, wow. Well, that's a nice place.
And I was insanely in love with one of my coworkers, this one girl that I was working with. And I don't know if you can relate, Dr. Lisa, but if you don't know yourself as a person and you fall in love with someone else, that can be a little problematic.
Well, falling in love and problematic go hand in hand. So no matter
with,
what,
right?
I'm going to give you that.
Yeah,
yeah, for sure.
So I just thought, you know what? Fuck every. Like, can I swear?
Yeah.
No. Okay.
Fuck it.
Okay. Fuck it. All right. Good. That feels good. Yeah. So I said, fuck everything, and I just walked out on that job. I gave her one last love letter. It was the core.
So this girl knew that you liked her.
Oh my God! I was so crazily infatuated. It was incredible.
And did you ever go out on a date, or did she just know that you were really liked her?
I think we both kind of liked each other, but I was so neurotic at the time that I couldn't compose myself in the way that I wanted to, and that was such a big frustration for me. I didn't understand, why can't I just be my natural self?
Mm.
Why do I have to constantly wear these masks,
mm-hmm.
pretend that I'm not somebody else, or pretend that I'm somebody else?
Right.
In fact, I went through a brief period in my life for a year and a half. I would introduce myself as Lou. Lou's not my name. Why? It's like a different persona.
So what about high school? You never had any friends in high school?
I had two mm-hmm. really close friends, and we would just smoke pot every day.
So you had friends. You have had, yeah.
Two buddies.
Yeah. Was your mother helpful about you not feeling comfortable in this country? Or did she just kind of want you to it out?
No, she definitely didn't want me to just tough it out. And she tried to do everything she could, you know. She tried to get me into therapy.
Oh, she did.
Into, you know, groups where I would be assimilated to other people of my age. But
it was just
I was
hard.
Very stubborn. I was very stubborn. And I was very picky,
and
too.
And you're also, what was I going to say? You're, What was I going to say? I lost my train of thought. It's okay. So you're...
Can I get you a glass of water, Dr.
No, Lisa? I'm good. Okay. Thank you. You want to take care of me.
Yeah, I'm a waiter.
You're like that. You've got that. You've got that in you.
Hospitality,
you've got
baby.
That, you've got that in you. Yeah, so you had a few friends. Well, that's good. Yeah.
One of the recent things that I started doing with Murmur, actually, is I do a Turkish coffee and fortune reading at the end of our sessions.
Oh, really?
So I'll make Turkish coffee.
You think you're good at fortune telling?
Oh my God, I'm so good.
How do you?
98% accuracy.
Really?
Yeah. What
All
happens?
All right, we'll do that. I want to get back. You're kidding.
We're off track.
This show's half over almost. Let's call it your unhappiness about this chick is kind of, you weren't doing Murmur then. That's what made you go on a trip, right? Mm-hmm.
That's right. I dropped everything. I went as far as I could get to, which was a city called Bonn.
Did you know, what were you thinking when you left New York? Were you like, did you sublet your apartment? Were you coming back? What were you thinking?
I told my roommate at the time, I said to him, look, here's another extra $500. I might be back next month or I might not be back, but this money is good for until the 15th. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, a day after I arrived in Turkey, he said, sorry, buddy, but I got somebody else to fill in your room, so you need to pick up your stuff. That's always hard to deal with when you're on the other side of the world. So he threw away all my stuff.
Well, that's fucked up.
It's very fucked up. And it's the kind of stuff.
Glad he's not your roommate.
No, absolutely
not. You're 28. You'll get more stuff.
But the thing is,
it's horrible.
Even something like that would so easily hamper your trust and faith in humanity. Throwing your stuff, your personal belongings out on the street. By the time I got back to New York from this trip, which I will get to, I was so elated. My experience in that 1 week trip in Turkey like completely changed my life.
So what was the trip like? Like what happened there So I want to know. I also want to do our station ID and remind people that they're listening to Radio Free Brooklyn. This is Dr. Lisa Gives a Shit, and I'm having a lovely conversation with the charming and thoughtful Ulich, who has a podcast called Murmur, where he, through street flyers, gets people off the street and has a podcast with strangers. And also, you should go to RadioFreeBrooklyn.com and check us out and donate some money. Any amount of money is good for us because we need the encouragement, if nothing else. We need to know that you've got our back, that you're our friend. We want to be one with you, okay? Oh my God, you know what I'm realizing? I just have to say this because I was supposed to read this on-air copy because we're supposed to get to South by Southwest, and I didn't read it in the beginning, and now I'm going to read it at the end because we're in the middle of this conversation, and I'm not going to break it up. What happened? What happened when you were in Turkey? Like I'm picturing somebody who was just like, fuck it. I've got nothing left to lose. I'm miserable. You get on a plane. Do you know where you're going?
Yeah, I went to Van, which is supposed to be the biggest opium den in the entirety of Turkey. It's where all the heroin comes from.
Wow.
So, you know,
Is that your goal? To go there? I mean, were you like, I want to go to where there's a lot of heroin?
I think my idea was that I want to just go as far as I could get to. And I didn't know myself. And I wanted to discover my country. I wanted to discover my roots.
Oh,
so I thought, you know what?
Sense.
Let me go to the furthest point of the country because Istanbul, being in the east, is very liberal, very, very modern. It's almost a European city. But then when you go out in the west, it's a completely, completely different world. It's a new way of life. And I want to see that and experience it with my own eyes.
So how was that?
It was incredible because, first off, I didn't tell anybody that I was going on this trip. So you can imagine, you know, the worry of my family, which admittedly wasn't the responsible thing to do on my part. But then again, I wasn't in the right
Maybe you wanted them. Maybe it was a little bit of a cry for help at the same time.
Definitely wasn't a cry for help. If anything, I think that was kind of the last stop is the way that I was thinking.
Okay. I could
say something really dark here, but you know, I don't want to.
Whatever. I mean, we have no boundaries here. That's for damn sure.
But when I got there, you know, I thought, look, this is supposed to be the major ISIS recruitment city in Turkey.
Uh-huh.
And I'm definitely not going somewhere safe. But for some reason, the people that came along my way in that city and during that 6 to 7 day trip were the nicest, the most benevolent and giving people I've ever encountered in my life. I mean, people would just come up to me on the street to say, brother, are you okay?
Wow.
What's on your mind? And when I spoke, you know, they could tell from my broken Turkish. Right now, I speak English a little better than my Turkish. So they could tell immediately when I spoke to them that I'm not from there.
Right.
They could tell I was wearing my, you know, scotch and soda jacket. Like, I'm very American.
Yeah.
And they would say things like, come over to us. Let us feed you.
Wow.
Let me give you a ride to the main area of the city.
Wow.
Let me buy you a pack of cigarettes. I don't know.
Were there no tourists there?
No.
Is it a really dangerous area to be?
It's not. Look, my dad was so worried sick that one of his closest friends works in the Turkish CIA.
Uh-huh.
And he hired him, or didn't hire him, but told him, look, my son is missing. I don't know where he is. So apparently, I didn't know this until later, but I had the CIA watching me every place that I went to during this trip.
So you stood out as a foreigner, which had... in a place that people don't see foreigners very often, right?
Definitely.
So they probably appreciated your interest in them for one thing. I mean, in other words, I'm just explaining why people would notice you to come over to you, but they were happy to see you. And how did you feel? Did you feel like you were just surrounded by like a world of friends or?
Oh gosh. Yeah. It was incredible. I mean, every city that I went to, at least 15 people would walk up to me and ask me, how are you doing? Do you need anything? These people barely have any money to feed themselves and they're giving me their food. And if I try to offer them money, they like start fighting with me. They don't take it.
What about the dangerous aspect of it? Where did you stay? Like, did you?
On a couple of occasions, people were kind enough to offer me their home, but I declined. Not because I didn't feel safe. I completely felt safe. But I felt as though I would be taken advantage because, you know, they barely have anything for themselves and barely any food. So I didn't want to have to be a burden. So I mainly stayed in hotels and like little dingy,
like, you know,
B&Bs, that kind of thing.
Like that. So you found places to stay.
Exactly.
But did you ever see people? Did you see people carrying guns? Did you see Did you see a lot of heroin addicts? Was it threatening?
I mean, a couple of times in Gaziantep, which is a city that's, I want to say, 100 miles north of Aleppo, which I'm sure many listeners know about Aleppo you know, all the not so fun stuff that's happening. But, you know, a couple of times just walking on the street after 10 p.m., you know, soldiers with machine guns would stop by on the street, pull their guns out on me and ask me what I'm doing out on the street at 10 o'clock. And after I tell them, look, you know, I'm visiting, you know, they would let me jump in their car and they would take me back to my, you know, B&B or whatever.
Was that frightening?
At that point, I really didn't care. So it didn't faze me. But in hindsight, you know, yeah, I mean, it was questionable.
Right. But you didn't see anybody get hurt, really?
No. Not during my trip.
And was it just like, what was the basic lifestyle there? Was it just a lot of really poor people? Did you see refugees?
Not so much the refugees. This was before the whole refugee thing.
Oh, right. Because
the refugee thing was like maybe 2 years ago. This is
three years and a half ago.
Yeah.
So it probably hadn't deteriorated as, but
it was a very rural lifestyle, very rural. But despite the fact that the people had nothing for themselves, they were very, very giving and very compassionate.
Was it satisfying to see people that were from the part of the world that you had grown up in? Did it soothe any of that?
Well, it was interesting because not unlike the United States of America, Turkey is very, very divided at the moment because there are the very, very liberals, and then there are the conservatives who are in support of Erdogan. I don't know how much you know about Erdogan.
I'm not going to be able to pass any tests on this.
He's a tyrant.
I know a little bit, but I'm not going to be able to
talk. He's a guy that wants to bring back veils so that women start have to wearing veils again on the street, which is going backwards, in my opinion.
So, yeah, I guess so.
Big time. But, you know, the people that I was meeting on this trip were supporters of his, you know, very, very conservative people. And I always kind of had a, for lack of a better word, a distaste towards this demographic. But once I got to meet them in person and I started talking with them, I realized why they were in such great support of him, because here he's going around to these little villages giving these poor people bags of coal, bags of free food, you know, free money for their village. So, of course, they're going to go and vote for him, you know?
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly what I was sort of trying to talk about at the beginning of the hour when I was reading that letter from the Trump supporter that I made friends with. Yeah, I mean, we can't judge all individuals. And then at the same time, there's a lot of really, like, not so nice people who were supporting the, you know, Black Lives Matter movement that are accusing you of being, you know, racist.
Yeah, let's say it.
Which isn't fair
either. It's very disheartening.
So we need to, like, really check out individuals by individuals.
It's also important that every phone call that I've gotten for the flyer thing, I've invited every person to come on Murmur to talk about it on an open platform.
Yeah.
And none of them have wanted to do it. So if you don't want to have an open discussion about it, don't just diarrhea all over my face and walk away.
Well, you know what? As Michelle says, when they go low, we go high. And just always, just always, you know,
keep your chin up.
That is a really good.
Be a gentleman or a gentlewoman.
Good to remember. So, but anyway, this trip had a profound effect on you. I'm hearing
100%.
And then what happened and what transformed? What made you feel like, okay, I can come home now?
Yeah, all it took was about 8 days. I traveled to 6 cities in Turkey, and when I came back to Istanbul, I was still very distraught. But at least that trip served as a turning point for me, where before I was very skeptical about just humanity in general. Gosh, I was such a nihilist. But after that, I was like, oh, there's kindness in humanity.
So were you seeing it at, like, your job in, you know, in New York and stuff like that? Were you seeing a lot of, like, people selfish, on a hustle kind of thing, pushing and shoving? Is that what had happened?
I mean, you know, I can tell you on so many occasions, taking the L train from the West Village, working from City Winery back to Jefferson Stop, and I would be crying my eyes out in the subway. And, you know, I do my best to hide it. You know, I was whimpering like a baby, but I couldn't control it. And, you know, the people around me were completely unfazed. But that's a New Yorker thing, you know. If somebody just got stabbed right next to you, we kind of have this wall. You know, we kind of block it out.
I don't know. I think that sounds kind of cynical. I'll say, like, if I see somebody crying, I'm not sure if they want some people want to like to feel anonymous in a crowd, like myself. So, but, you know, the thing is that you were able to sort of see a part of humanity that you hadn't seen before. And maybe when you came back, you were able to more easily cultivate that in your own life. I imagine having a job at the city winery, I mean, that's any kind of waiter job is pretty, people aren't necessarily the most compassionate. I mean, that's a tough business, to being a waiter, right? Are you still working?
Only 2 days a week. I'm trying to shorten it.
Yeah. Are you making some money from your, or?
From the Murmur thing, yeah. Thankfully. I rent out my studio, actually, for people who want to do their own podcast.
Oh,
so if anybody wants to do their own podcast, you're more than welcome to rent out the Murmur Studio. It's only $18 an hour, and I do all the editing and mastering for free.
You do?
Yeah.
Wow. And it looks really nice.
It's a very homey
spot.
I want to have you over.
Oh,
not as like a Murmur guest, just to hang out. I'm going to read your Turkish coffee and give your fortune reading.
Okay, you got it. All right. So you came back and you started doing the podcast.
Yeah. Not immediately. I first moved to the Betsy. I lived in a sublet for about a good 5 months,
mm-hmm.
I sold off all of my musical equipment and took out a loan from the bank for about, you know, $4,000 to $5,000.
Oh, you were a musician?
I was a musician, a failed one. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's a whole other hour story.
Exactly.
Uh-huh. So
I looked for an apartment for 5 months in the East Village specifically. The reason why I chose East Village is because I wanted to be localized somewhere central for this Bremer project.
Oh, so that's smart.
When people would see the flyer, it didn't matter if you were from New Jersey, Queens, Bronx. It would be an easy place for people to come and have access to.
Smart. So what has the experience of doing Murmur and having those, at least to date, those 200 or so strangers come over? Like, how has it transformed you?
I should correct one thing. It's probably near 300,
okay.
But a lot of the shows that I don't air, because when people come on, they end up talking too in-depth about the things that are going on in their personal and private lives. And they ask me afterwards, can you please refrain from putting this up on air?
Well,
and so we
respectful.
Just keep it between us.
Yeah.
How it changed me as a person, I went from, like I said, having barely no friends in New York to having so many people in my life right now that I actually would rather just have some time alone to myself and just read the New Yorker on my own. That's my idea of fun these days.
So what changed? Is it your attitude towards people, the people you attracted? What do you think happened through the podcast?
Well, you know, I started
or
the
just
project.
Practice. It could just be the simple act of talking to strangers.
I still very, very much love talking to people. I feel like by engaging other people, I get to learn new things about myself. Mm-hmm. It's like me looking at you right now and seeing the way that you react to the things I say. It's like a mere reflection.
Yeah, I guess so.
It's a beautiful thing. But I'm going to have to be a little a nihilist again and say that if there's one thing that I learned from doing this Murmur thing for the past 3 years, it's that most people are narcissistic and want to talk about nothing but themselves.
Well, but isn't that part of the way it's set up when you ask them to come on your show?
I say it's an open conversation. I'd say it's a dialogue, but a lot of times people will expect me to interview them, even though I stated very, very clearly that it's a back and forth. It's very hurtful to me when somebody comes on. And
interesting. So you're a little conflicted about your format, I think. I think you're a little, which I can understand. I mean, this format, for example, is clearly, you know, more of an interview or a therapy session, or call it whatever you want. And in therapy, the rules are the therapist doesn't talk about themselves. Mm-hmm. And I kind of stick to that. But I think what you're saying is that there's something from, you're saying that that you find people really narcissistic. But what's also kind of interesting is that you're setting up a situation for them to be narcissistic.
Oh, you think so?
Oh, yes.
I tell them deliberately that it's not your show. It's not my show. It's our show. It's our talk. It's
that doesn't sound realistic to me at
really?
All, honey.
Really? You don't think so, Dr. Lisa?
No.
It's so realistic.
No,
Ulrich. I will say one thing, though. This conflict that you're talking about is a good way to instigate drama in the moment, which makes the conversation passionate.
What do you mean?
And interesting. For instance, if somebody's really bugging me, I will say it straight to their face. I will say, look, you just came on here talking about your failed acting career for 10 minutes and you didn't even bother to look at me in the eyes and ask me how I'm doing. I'm getting a little bored, buddy. So, you know, that might be a little blunt or frank thing to say to somebody that you don't know, that you just invited to your house. But I find that with that level of honesty and directness, it kind of makes a conversation more interesting and more genuine and in the moment.
Okay, well, I'm going to say that that you're setting them up and that you may have this is just my take off the cuff. I'm just being honest, just being direct. It sounds to me a little bit like you're setting them up, because no matter what, we have to understand that you're the one, it's your place, You're the one with this experience of doing the podcast. Even though you may want it to be more of a conversation, just by the trope, the way it's set up. Of course, it's not set up that it's going to be. You're also, I think, maybe not quite that clear with them about how you want to have it be a back and forth conversation.
Oh, it turns into a back and forth eventually.
Eventually. But I also think that you get a charge, and maybe they do too, out of sort of like confronting them.
No, it's always fun. It's always in good nature. I never, ever deliberately set somebody up in my apartment to put them in a bad position,
right,
to make fun of them or to put them down. For me, that would, I think, be kind of antithetic. Is that the word? Antithetical.
And, yeah. So you
it would
feel
be antithetical
like,
to what the murmur thing.
So the confrontation is a way to get them closer.
In a strange way, yes.
It's like an affectionate ribbing.
Yes. Yeah. It's okay. Like I'm ruffling feathers, but it's in good nature.
Right. So it's like saying, I know you well enough that I can say this confrontational thing and we'll still be friends.
Yeah.
Okay. I get that. But here's what I'm puzzled about. The idea of using the word narcissistic when you invite people over. There's a disconnect from what I'm getting between the understanding of the people coming over and your expectation. Do you know what I mean?
Oh,
And then also you saying they're narcissistic because...
Not everybody.
No, but mostly. I mean, somebody could say, and I'm not saying you're narcissistic, but somebody could say that you are narcissistic by expecting people to come over and then want to talk at all about you. Do you know what I mean?
I don't want them to talk about me. I just wanted to. It's like a game of tennis, Dr. Lisa. You know, if I throw the ball into your court, don't keep the ball in your court and just start bouncing it on your racket. Mm-hmm. Throw it back to me so that I could receive it and throw it back to you. That's all I want. And maybe sometimes, yes, I have to use aggressive, for lack of a better, aggressive means in order to get the conversation into fitting the way that I quote unquote expect it to be.
Okay, but we're going to have like just a little over 5 minutes, but so I just want to make sure, I mean, I just want to let you know, but because that's my job also, keeping an eye on the time and pacing. What do you consider like a really good interview, like, or a good session, whatever you call it? What do you consider a satisfying, like, can you describe like one of your shows that your ideal thing that went really well?
Spontaneity. If I'm laughing a lot and if the guest is laughing a lot, I know that's a good sign. If in the first 10 minutes of the conversation, the person I'm talking to, just in the spirit of fun of the moment, lifts up her skirt and, you know, just for fun, that shows me that we're being in the moment. And that has happened, by the way. I got a flash on my podcast a couple of times.
Nice. Good for you.
Thank you.
I'm not
surprised. I don't think it's anything to, you know, be bragging about, but you know, it's a testament to the fact that people that come onto it enjoy it. They thank me afterwards. There was a guy from Holland that came on the show about a year ago. He was so moved. I was very, very blunt with him, very, very direct, but he was so affected by our conversation that when he went back to Amsterdam, he created an entire art installation.
Wow, that's
a gallery
so cool.
Based around our conversation.
Oh, that's so cool.
On the text format of our talk splattered all around the walls.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
So I might be a dick sometimes, but my intentions are good.
No, I am not saying anything like that. So do you have like a goal? Have you ever thought about doing live shows or do you have a goal beyond the podcast?
I love to do something like that. And the opportunity almost came about a month ago, but, you know, it's still kind of up in the air.
But you're not sure exactly. You don't have like was it a TV show? Is that what you'd like to do?
There's a music venue called Bowery Electric and they wanted me to do their music podcast, but it's still up in the air.
Oh, nice.
And from the looks of things, it's probably not going to happen. So that's why I'm kind of
openly talking about it. Yeah, but something like that. Yeah, I could see that. Yeah. So are you dating anybody now? Do you have any girlfriends?
I'm dating one of my Murmur guests.
Yeah? Oh, how nice. And how long has that been going on?
She came on my podcast 2 years ago, and we started dating when I went to Florida to visit her in February. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah, so maybe like 4 or 5 months, and now she moved to New York City.
Oh, nice. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Not with you, not in with you.
She's in with me, but she's moving out at the end of the month. She got her own place in Astoria.
She got her place. It's just as well, right? You don't want to be too serious right away.
I mean, right. When you're living in a studio apartment in New York City, sometimes the proximity helps. When you're always together in the same room with somebody, it can be difficult to manage. A little bit of distance helps.
Yeah, for anybody. So that's really great, right?
I feel good, Dr. Lisa. I mean, I hope I didn't say anything to, you know, upset you. Maybe you had this idea about my podcast that I'm this, you know, benevolent, kind-hearted person. I am all those things.
No. Are you, I'm feeling like you're...
My intentions are good. I'll just say that.
No, I have no doubt. I think you're a very kind person. I'm surprised that you're thinking about it. That I think that you are what, belligerent or?
I'm sensitive to what other people think. I'm
you
not
really are.
I am very.
Yeah, you are. So you got to own your, you got to own who you are.
Oh, I own it. I own
it. Are you in therapy?
No, I'm not. I wish I was. I need to find a therapist.
You need a
therapist. I don't have health insurance.
Okay, so CMPS, Centered for Modern Psychoanalysis, on West 10th Street has a sliding scale, and they have a people who have a lot of training but not a lot of experience, and you can go there and get a great therapist for very, very little. Because it's seeming to me a little bit like you have everything going for you. There's no question about that. I think that is really disorienting. I think that was huge. Like your mom taking you to America at age 9. There's a lot of residual stuff like that. And then it seems like there must be some identity issues, right?
There was. Not so much anymore, thankfully.
But yeah. And also like your relationship with your dad, you missed him, all that stuff. That's tough. Those are really, really tough things that make me feel some sadness and compassion for you, and admiration as well, because you've taken those lemons and made lemonade out of them, and you have learned how you have, you know, through generosity, through receiving generosity through other people and giving it back. I think you've made your life a lot richer. And that impresses me from my point of view, young, very young man.
Also, I made lots of really great friends too.
And yeah.
Yeah. I hang out with many of my Murmur guests.
Yeah.
We just had a party 2 weeks ago. We had a drum circle in the apartment. There were
really?
20 old Murmur guests, and we all just drummed away. It was so much fun.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah. So you stay in touch with them.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And you introduce them to, you have like your own little community.
Exactly. A little tribe.
That's so great. Community is really, really important. So I want to make sure that we get everything in here. And are you looking? So you're always looking for guests. Do you want to tell us about that? Tell my guests about your wanting guests.
All the time. I never, ever turn anybody down who wants to come on Murmur to be a guest.
How can they get in touch with you?
Go on murmur.com, M-U-R-M-U-R, talk.com, or just call me by my phone number. Can I tell my phone number?
Well, if it's up to you.
Yeah.
I wouldn't give out mine, but go ahead.
347-717-9749. 533 East 5th Street is my apartment. Just ring Buzz 109. Just show up spontaneously, and we'll sit down and we'll get the microphones ready and have a conversation in 2 minutes. I'll make you Turkish coffee and read your fortune at the end.
Wow. That's really beautiful. Now, you know what's really amazing? In this day and age, in this, you know, town, in the big picture of what town means, that you made that possible. And there's a real, like, certain fearlessness. And it's just fearless and generous. I can't imagine anybody else that would just give out their phone number and address on the air. Do you?
I kind of feel like public property at this moment, you know, at this phase of my life. So I just wear my heart on my sleeve. Yeah, whatever. It's not a big deal for me.
Beautiful. I hope you guys learned something from this, because I think I have. You got to be nice. Life is short. And the more you give, the more you get back, right?
That's true.
Yeah. So I want to make sure that I let you guys know about what we're trying to do. Have you heard of South by Southwest, Ulrich?
I have. It's an amazing music festival in Austin, Texas.
Yeah, music, and they have all sorts of stuff. Have you ever been? I actually went once.
How was it?
Oh, it's incredible. My husband did a talk about Woody Guthrie.
Oh, he's great.
Yeah. He's had a lot to do with the Woody Guthrie Foundation and Woody Guthrie's daughter and granddaughter. He did a photo book about Greystone, where Woody Guthrie spent his last days. Anyway, do you know that Radio Free Brooklyn is in the running to be on a panel there? So this is what I'm trying to do, folks. We need you person out there who's listening right now. We need your help, okay? So what we want you to do is go to radiofreebrooklyn.com/South by Southwest, okay? And vote for us. So what you go there and you cast your vote for our panel, DIY radio and local community radios, local music communities. What the fuck am I saying here? This isn't my job. This isn't my main job, reading. This is too much pressure. I have to deliver something really normal. I don't do this stuff. Anyway, you know what? Tom, I'm sorry, okay? I fucked up. I'm sorry, Tom. And Mom, I know you're mad at me too, but you're always mad at me and I'm fucking sick of your shit. You've been dead for 20 years. Just get off my back. So anyway, we want to get this panel at South by Southwest. So it's really easy, folks. All you do is go to radiofreebrooklyn.com/South by Southwest. The voting ends August 25th. So you only have like a little bit. What day of the week is August 25th? Is it like a Tuesday or when? When is that? I lost track of the days. Today's the 17th. It's like a week away.
25th is going to be a Friday.
Okay, so it's a week from Friday. We don't have a lot of time. We really want to get to do this. So we need you to do that. Okay, will you do it? Will you? Oh, that would be so great. And then you can hear us from South by Southwest. Next time we'll help you get to go. It's going to be awesome. And you know what happens after my show, Ulrich, is this other show that's so great. It's called Lost and Rewound. And it's by this really great host, Elon Danziger, and he's a guy who carried around a tape recorder in the mid-90s. He was in middle school then, and he just created an audio time capsule of prepubescent life, and that's kind of his inspiration behind his show. He does like talk, and he has people come on and play their mixtapes and stuff like that, and it's a really great show, and it's on in a minute and a half right after this one. So I want you guys to stay tuned for that, because if you haven't had the Elon Danziger Lost and Rewound experience, you really need to. And I want to thank you all for listening today, and I want to make sure that you come and visit me at Dr. Lisa Gives a Shit on RadioFreeBrooklyn.com. And you can always write to me at DrLisa@RadioFreeBrooklyn.org anytime. You know, if you have an issue you'd like me to weigh in on, I'm always here to help. You know that. And sometimes I actually analyze artwork. People will send me their artwork, and then I will tell them, like, what I think, what it says about them, which is always really fun. People love that.
Can I give a quick shout out to a friend?
Sure, please do.
Nadir, thank you for always being a friend to me when I've been lonely in this city. Thank you, my friend. Nadir, I love you.
Oh, isn't that sweet? That's not your girlfriend, is it?
No. Just my best friend.
Your best friend.
Iranian
friend. A female.
Dude. A dude.
A dude.
Yeah, I love him. He's like a brother to me.
That's nice. You know, you seem really able to access your emotions. Maybe that. Do you think American men are not? It's a non-American man thing, right?
I think